number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. The NBA playoffs got a little interesting tonight in a game I'm still trying to process. The Dallas Mavericks in Oklahoma City beat the Thunder 85-84. A real strong bounce back from absolutely getting roasted by the Thunder in Game 1. They come back and win Game 5, and they do it defensively. Now, this is why I'm still trying to process this game. Because if this was a regular season game, then you would be trying to find maybe a trend. You might look at this game and see, well, was it just an off night? Did the Thunder just not shoot well because they were coming off a back-to-back road trip or something along those lines? This was a game in which the Thunder were awful. Awful. Kevin Durant was 7 of 30 from the floor. It was one of the worst shooting performances. I'm sorry, 7 of 33 from the floor. It's one of the worst shooting performances in NBA playoff history. Overall, they shot 33%. They were 7 of 33 from behind the arc. Now, is this something now that changes this series? Well, I don't know, because teams do go cold on any given night. Sometimes the ball just doesn't fall and you're out of rhythm. You can attribute it to strong defense by Dallas, but you know, teams go through this occasionally. This was so bad that I'm starting to think this was just an aberration. That the Thunder aren't going to be this awful in the playoffs. Now, let me make this clear here. Dallas played good defensively. The Thunder shot 33%. Kevin Durant was 7 of 33. And the Mavericks still almost lost this game. If Steven Adams is a split second quicker, putting the ball back on that backboard and in that net, in the final seconds, the Thunder would have escaped with a Game 2 victory. But where it stands now, the Thunder get a road win and they split this series, which is exactly what they wanted to do. So you can put away the whole Game 1 not showing up and losing by 38 points. Because tonight, Durant's missing all over the place. The Mavericks do capitalize, and they've evened up the series. Regardless of how the game goes about and what the stats are, if the Mavericks were told at the beginning of this series, you'll get a split, they'd take it. Even if both games were close and they played well, or if they played awful and got the split, it doesn't matter. They got the split. But if I'm looking for one trend in this game, one, that has been consistent from the regular season into the playoffs, it is this. The Oklahoma City Thunder entered the game in the fourth quarter with the lead and then couldn't hold on to it. That has been a real theme. That has happened time and time again this season. They do not close very well. And they're particularly not very good on closing on nights in which they shoot 33% from the floor and Durant is 7 of 33. But if you watch the end of that game, there was a missed free throw. The Oklahoma City Thunder came down the court in the final seconds, put up a couple of shots that missed, but Steven Adams was able to get the rebound on the opposite side. He was on the left side facing the basket. He was able to get the rebound, put the ball back up. It looked to the naked eye at the beginning that he had gotten the shot off. It went in. Everybody went crazy. And the Thunder had won the game. And then they went over replay, and it was clear that the ball was still in his hands when the buzzer sounded, when the lights went on the backboard. So they waved off the basket, and the Mavericks get the victory. So as far as processing this game in terms of what it means, I don't know. I think it's just an off night for the Oklahoma City Thunder. But it's exactly what Dallas wanted. Even if Dallas didn't particularly play that well on the other end. I mean, it's, you know, they got the Thunder shooting terrible and they didn't win by 10. One of the other games tonight was Toronto beating Indiana. Now, good for the Raptors, because this ends a seven-game losing skid in the playoffs. And they've evened up that series at one. And we talked about this yesterday. There isn't a better fan base than the Toronto Raptors when it comes to the playoffs. All right, they're just as good as any other fan base in the league. All right, as crazy as they are in Oakland, as crazy as they are in Cleveland, as crazy as they are in anywhere else in the NBA, the Toronto Raptor fans are just as crazy. They got, you know, the big outdoor party, they're celebrating, they're going nuts, they're just dying for the Raptors to give them a victory. And after game one, it looked like, all right, they're going down the same road where the Raptors go to get killed, which is the first round of the playoffs, regardless of how good they are. Remember all season, we kept asking, what's the team that could challenge Cleveland in the East? And there would be times when we would do our NBA updates, and we would be talking about the Raptors who had won six in a row or five in a row or had gone on the road and won, you know, four out of five and looking good and playing well. And yet the number one concern was, yeah, that's fine. But until they show up in the playoffs, I'll hold off my opinion on the Raptors. And this was consistent with almost anybody we talked to, because there is this feel. We do this in all sports too. If you had an NFL team that, you know, made the playoffs but constantly lost in the first round all the time, you'd be like, all right, yeah, if they make it to the next round, then I'll hold off my judgment until then. That's the way the Raptors are. But they do get a win tonight. They beat Indiana 98-87. They do even up that series. Now, the Golden State Warriors are without Steph Curry tonight and are leading by 15 against the Houston Rockets. A couple of observations on this one. I believe that Golden State is immensely talented even without Steph Curry. I think most people see the Warriors that way. Klay Thompson and the rest of the guys, they're better than Houston. Houston is a confused team. They're hard to watch. I agree with Charles Barkley. They just don't look in sync. They don't look organized. They don't look like they're well coached. They don't play any defense. So in this series, it does make a lot of sense for Steve Kerr to be very cautious and very careful with Steph Curry. No need to keep, you know, no need to roll him out there too early. You're going to need him for the long haul. However, Golden State pulled away in this game, but pulled away in this game late. The Rockets had been hanging around for most of the third quarter and the fourth quarter until the Warriors started to pull away. I would be very careful about how much you want to try to go out with this without Steph Curry. Now, they hold on and win this game, which it looks like they will. They'll have a 2-0 series lead. That's a lot of wiggle room to play around with. But remember, the quicker you can get out of these series, the longer you're going to have to regroup and recoup as a team. There's no need to let Houston hang around in a game, especially at the Toyota Center, and extending a series they have no business being in. The Warriors are better than Houston in almost every facet of the game. Oh, wait, did I say almost? I meant every facet of the game. But this is the walking of a tightrope for Steve Kerr, because you don't want to lose Steph Curry to a game four, up three games to none lead on the Rockets. You don't want to lose Steph Curry in that game. But you also can't have him sitting on the bench until he's 100%. Eventually, you do have to say, get out there and let's roll the dice. Injuries can happen to anybody at any time. We saw it with Kevin Love last year. We saw it with Kyrie Irving last year. Injuries are just part of the game. If you have one, you get healthy, you go out. You don't have one, get healthy, and then play sparingly only when you are needed. He is the MVP of the league. He has to be out there eventually. But they can win, you know, can they win the championship without him? I don't know. I don't know if they can beat San Antonio and Cleveland, if that's indeed their route, without him in any one of the games. They're certainly talented and they're deep enough. And I'm not saying it would be easy for the Spurs to roll over them or easy for the Cavaliers to roll over them, but they absolutely need the MVP. It's why he's the MVP. You don't be most valuable player if you're just easily replaced if you're on the bench. But this is where Steph Curry's, you've got to watch him and you've got to just monitor where you're at in the series. The Warriors are going to go up 2-0 on the Rockets. If you put him in game three, fine. Just monitor the minutes. If you put him in game four to try to close it out early, fine. Monitor the injury and monitor the minutes. There is no need to have him go all out if you're just going to close out the Rockets quickly. But if the Rockets had won tonight, if they had eked out a game, God help us if they did. But if they did, then you really got to consider, okay, is 80% good enough? Is 85% good enough? Because we ain't going to let this series get away from us. This still is an NBA playoff series with NBA players. All right, coming up, a special day in Boston. We'll talk about that next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number to join us on the show tonight. Talk some NBA. We go around Major League Baseball coming up in a couple of segments. Adam's news of the night. But coming up at the bottom of the hour, Chris Fedor is going to join us from Cleveland.com. We're going to talk about the Cavaliers, who won game one against Detroit. And it looks like they've woken up a little bit. They got a good shot from Detroit. Detroit hit some threes and did some good things, but, you know, they're an eight seed going up against the Cavaliers. You have to not only do good things, you have to do great and pretty much perfect things. But the Cavaliers woke up a little bit. Great game from Kevin Love. Where are the Cavaliers mentally right now coming into the playoffs? Because they really sleptwalked through the final couple of games of the regular season. And when you get to the postseason, this is where you want to be. 800-777-2907, but you got to be up for it. So the Boston Marathon was today. I grew up in New England, and the Boston Marathon was one of the great days in Boston sports. It really is a remarkable day. It's Patriots Day. It's kind of in a celebration of the American Revolution and whatnot. But it's the running of the Boston Marathon and an early afternoon. And I really shouldn't say afternoon because it's an 11 o'clock start at Fenway Park. But it's an early day game at Fenway Park. And the idea is that the crowd leaves Fenway as the marathon runners are crossing the finish line. And it's just a really, really great day. And one of the things that I got to do when I was one of the first radio stations I worked at was I covered the marathon with the help of my boss, who was the sports director at the time. And you would be on trucks and you'd go around and you'd kind of give updates on the marathon. And it was mostly I was sent to cover the atmosphere, not so much the race. I just, you know, nobody really cares who wins these races. But the celebration of the day is really what makes the Boston Marathon great. Now, I have friends who ran the Boston Marathon. I had friends who ran the Boston Marathon today. And I think for pretty much forever, I'm always going to remember what happened in 2013. Now, I started on this network in December of 2012. And at the time, I was a part-time host and I did some anchoring for the network. And I was on that day to do updates on Major League Baseball and, you know, maybe give a marathon update of what was going on. But I remember spending every top and the bottom of the hour update on this bombing. And it was just surreal. And that's the one thing about being in this business is that sometimes you have to transition from the sports side of the things that we love, and sometimes you have to transfer over into the news. And I'm not great at that. That's one of the reasons I like covering sports is because I try to stay away from news. I don't do tragedy really well. I can't turn that off. And sometimes I have to do it. And I had to do it 3 years ago. And it was surreal to see an event that every single year, even as a kid growing up, it would just be a cool day. It's spring. The Red Sox are playing. The marathon is running. It's a celebration of Boston. It's a celebration of the city. But what I will take out of the 2013 year from that tragedy at the marathon and the bombings and the loss of life and the injuries was the amazing response that the city had, led by David Ortiz, who really cements himself as one of the premier Bostonian athletes with how he responded to that bombing, fans at Fenway Park, how the Red Sox won the World Series, pretty much creating kind of a beginning and an end to an answer for the city to respond. Now, listen, sports you got to always put sports into some sort of perspective, right? I get this. I get told this all the time. You know, I lament on a loss, or I lament on a bad break for athletes. There's always some Yahoo out there in my Facebook feed or whatever that reminds me that these guys get paid a lot of money and it isn't the end of the world. And I go, I understand. Priorities, I get it. I put them in play. But one of the things about sports is it does unite us like nothing else. It brings us together like nothing else. It bridges the racial gap. It bridges the age gap. It bridges a gender gap. There is something about a community pulling together in unity of rooting for something that is really wonderful. For all the bad things that sports does, and it brings out the worst in a lot of people, there are moments when it does good. And the day David Ortiz yelled what he yelled at Fenway Park, on the day of defiance, if you will, and unity for the city of Boston, it was a great sports moment. And it's a great moment in that city. And that city has had tremendous athletes, tremendous guys who have come through and have been some of the best of the best in the sports world, whether it's Bill Russell, whether it's Ted Williams, whether it's Bobby Orr, whether it's Larry Bird, whether it's Tom Brady, right? I mean, of some of the best have gone through Boston. And David Ortiz is on the list for the contributions that he had with the Red Sox in delivering World Series, and that moment in 2013 when he unified a city and talked about the city. The Boston Marathon is never going to be run in my lifetime where I'm not going to remember 2013. Because, again, it was one of the best sporting days of my childhood. I'm not a runner. I don't run marathons. I don't even care about the marathon itself as an event in terms of who wins and loses. But just April, we've just got done the winter. We're really kicking in baseball. They're running this race. It's pretty cool. And today was, again, another one of those days. To see my friends who run the marathon and to see them posting the pictures today of running the marathon, it reminded me how cool that city was and how wonderful it was for that city to come together. It's one of the reasons I said David Ortiz should have been Sportsman of the Year in 2013. Now, he was going up against arguably one of the greatest seasons an NFL quarterback had ever had. And by the way, he was 37 in Peyton Manning, who threw 53 touchdown passes. But I look back on 2013 and I see a complete story. I see a tragedy. I see a unification. I see a goal. I see that goal achieved. That's why I thought David Ortiz was Sportsman of the Year that year. To just sort of bookend a year of tragedy, defiance, World Series championship. To go in April, to have that happen to the city, to go in October, to see them celebrating another World Series title. And I know it doesn't replace the loss of life and all of that stuff, but it was a very special moment for the city of Boston. All right, coming up, Chris Fedor joins us, Cleveland.com on the Cavaliers. Is LeBron James happy? He doesn't look like it, but he just might. We'll get into the nucleus of Cleveland next. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio as we look on the NBA playoffs. And let's go to the Eastern Conference with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are a one seed. And Detroit gave them a little bit of fits in game one. But overall, what is the health? What is the status? What are the updates on the Cleveland Cavaliers as we head into the playoffs, the part of the season that they were really looking forward to? Chris Fedor joins us from Cleveland.com to talk Cavaliers with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing great, Tony. How are you tonight?
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And I kind of alluded to that in the beginning. It seemed like the Cavaliers were just like, get us out of this season. Let's get to the playoffs. As far as a wake-up call, was this kind of the thing that they needed to get a good puncher's shot from Detroit?
I guess you can kind of look at it like that. I think the Cavs, though, went into this series against Detroit not overlooking them at all. They were respectful of them. Every time that we brought up, you know, moving forward into the playoffs or the big picture, they said that they weren't taking anything for granted, and they feel like Detroit's a tough team, a physical team, a team that's very well coached. And I think you saw all those things in Game 1. The Cavs had a bit of a problem with Boston in that same sense last year in the first round of the postseason. Not that they were ever in danger necessarily, but just the style, the respect that they had for the opponent. So I do think it's good that the Cavs are getting tested here in the first round. Obviously, you as a team, you want the easiest road possible. You don't want to extend yourself early on in playoff series. But seeing this kind of tough, physical, well-coached team, I think that's going to help the Cavs moving forward, because if you look at their path and you try and picture what it's going to be like, Boston, Atlanta, both well-coached teams, and then maybe potentially in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Miami Heat. It's the same kind of thing. So these are the kinds of games that I think will prepare the Cavs well for what's to come.
What was the last couple of weeks of the regular season like for a team that had its share of drama and was just trying to get out of the season to get to the postseason?
Yeah, the last couple of weeks were inconsistent. I would say the same way that the entire season has been for the Cavs. But at the same time, I think they felt like they were confident going into the postseason. I think they felt like they found some things offensively and defensively that worked for them. They changed their starting lineup back to Tristan Thompson to get ready for the postseason. And this is a team that has talked all along, their entire goal was be at your best as the postseason arrives. And if you look at the last little bit of the season, they got a good win against Atlanta. Then they got another good win against Atlanta. They beat Charlotte. So you're talking about a few playoff teams mixed in there that the Cavs were able to beat, gain some momentum, gain some confidence. And I think the biggest thing that you saw in the month of April is a different Kevin Love. And that Kevin Love that showed up in April after having a conversation with Ty Lue about being more aggressive, being more assertive, demanding the basketball, that guy showed up in Game 1 against Detroit, and that guy is the guy that the Cavs need throughout this playoff run.
It was really interesting to watch. He played center. He's hitting threes. He's a great matchup from a Cavaliers perspective on Drummond, who didn't really have much against him. In terms of his role in the series against Detroit, more of that in Game 2?
I think he has to, Tony. I do, because if you look at this, the way that this series sets up and the matchups involved, look, there's nobody for Detroit that can guard or even pester LeBron. But you can say that about a number of different teams around the NBA, especially ones that the Cavs are going to see here in the playoff run. But when it comes to this series in particular, Kevin Love has a distinct advantage, and he's the guy that the Cavs have to continue to play through. And I think in Game 1, one of the best things, Tony, that the Cavs did is they identified matchups that they could exploit, and they continued to take advantage of those. And that's what you have to do in a seven-game series. That's what you have to do in the playoffs overall. The two guys that are going to be trying to guard Kevin Love, not named Andre Drummond, are Tobias Harris and Marcus Morris. Those guys came into the NBA, Tony, as small forwards. Kevin Love is still one of the best back-to-the-basket players in the entire NBA. He's so much more than just a standstill, catch-and-shoot three-point shooter the way that I think he was used too often by head coach David Blatt. Now that Ty has taken over, now that Kevin's being more assertive, now that he's being more aggressive, he's playing more inside than going outside. And the thing that makes him so dangerous, Tony, is that he can do all of those things. It's not just his floor spacing, his ability to knock down three-pointers. It's those things combined with him being able to take advantage of mismatches against guys like Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris, And then if they put him at the five and Andre Drummond has to cover him out at the perimeter, that's going to create second chance opportunities, offensive rebounds for Tristan Thompson, LeBron James. Andre Drummond's the best rebounder in the NBA, and he's got to guard Kevin Love out to the three-point line. That's really, really tough. So I think in this series in particular, the guy that Detroit doesn't have an answer for more than anybody else is Kevin Love.
Chris Fedor joins us, Cleveland.com on the Cavaliers. And people who listen to this show know I've said this kind of thing over and over again, but I have to repeat it. The closer you get to a story, the more the little nuances make sense, and the further away you get, you tend to simplify it. The drama around this team with LeBron and some of the cryptic tweets and the behind-the-scenes stuff, those of us who are far away from Cleveland read it as something like, oh, he's unhappy, he's going to leave. You are closer to that situation. What did you make of all of that?
Tony, this was the weirdest great team that I've ever seen in the NBA because they were number one in the Eastern Conference for the entire season, basically. They have LeBron James, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving. But there was drama. There were some things going on behind the scenes, and they were real. And they dealt with them throughout the course of the regular season, and some of those were self-inflicted by LeBron James. At the same time, Tony, the thing that I continued to say to everybody when they would ask me the question is, I don't think it's something that's going to prevent them from winning a championship. If they're not going to win a championship, it's going to be because they're not as good defensively as they were last year throughout the postseason. Or it's because Iman Shumpert, their best perimeter defender, has taken a huge step back this year, or Timofey Mozgov has taken a huge step back this year, or heck, the fact that nobody on this team beyond Matthew Dellavedova and Tristan Thompson has gotten better from last year's NBA Finals series against Golden State, where everybody on that roster got better. Or if the Cavs don't win, it's going to be because Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, and Kevin Love, they clash in terms of style on the court. But the stuff behind the scenes, that was real. Those were things that the team had to navigate and deal with. And it makes it that they're one loss away from drama. And drama's probably going to creep in again here throughout the postseason run because it was around all regular season. And I don't think it just goes away. I just don't think it's going to be the thing that prevents them from winning a championship.
Is LeBron as excited to put on a Cavaliers uniform in 2016 as he was in July of 2014 when he wrote the letter?
Yeah, I think so. But I think at the same time, Tony, Kevin Love from afar probably looked better to LeBron, and Kyrie Irving from afar probably looked better to LeBron. Once you actually play with those guys and you see their weaknesses a little bit more, and then you have to deal with all of the stylistic things that you have to deal with and the personalities that you have to deal with, that becomes a problem. I have used this analogy over and over and over again, Tony. It's kind of like going into a bar, and then you see a couple of girls at the bar from far away, and you're like, man, all right, that's an 8. That's looking pretty good to me now. And then you get up close, and you're like, holy crap, that's a 5. Because you see those flaws a little bit more close up. And I think it's the same kind of thing. From afar, LeBron could see Kyrie Irving with this great one-on-one ability, with this great knack for being clutch in the fourth quarter, and he can see Kevin Love spacing the floor and knocking down these threes and showing off a skill set similar to Chris Bosh. But then when he actually has to deal with him and everything else that's real that you don't see when you're in Miami, it becomes more challenging, I think, than maybe he thought it was going to be.
Good stuff. Chris Fedor again, Cleveland.com on the Cavaliers as they get ready for their Game 2 matchup with Detroit and beyond. Chris, great catching up with you. I hope we can do it again.
You got it, Tony. Anytime, buddy.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers and the rest of the NBA playoffs. All right, so Houston is in trouble, but with Golden State, what would you do with Steph Curry? And the Dallas Mavericks, even up their series against Oklahoma City, is the Thunder in trouble? We'll talk about all those things next as we go around the league. It is Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us as we continue through the night tonight. Our thanks to Chris Fedor of Cleveland.com. I thought he said something really interesting in that interview about okay, the drama around Cleveland, and this is something we've talked about a lot, because I got to be honest with you, it's so perplexing to me. I have no idea if LeBron James is happy back with the Cavaliers or not. He doesn't appear to be, but he could be. It could all be just, you know, trying to stir up some drama, because that's what he does. He could be completely thrilled, or he could be really disappointed that this didn't work out the way he wanted. I don't know. But the way Chris pointed it out was interesting. He says most complicated, you know, great team he's ever covered, and talked about the, you know, when you see some girl at a bar that looks like an 8, and then you get closer and she's more like a 5. And that may have been the case here.
I loved that analogy.
I think it's right on. I think it's right on the money. Because remember when LeBron got there and it was like, all right, LeBron's just going to orchestrate a new big three, and he's got Kyrie, and he's going to go out and get Kevin Love, and they're going to be unbeatable, because we hadn't really seen the rise of the Warriors yet. Remember, this was summer of 2014 when LeBron announced he was going back to Cleveland. So we hadn't really seen how great Golden State was going to be yet. And, you know, it was, here's LeBron working again, going to put together this dream team. And I think he's right that it just appeared like on paper that this would be great right away. And then there were injuries, and then there was, what role is Kevin Love going to play, and what's Kyrie's role, and how is LeBron going to handle this, and coaching change, and all of those other things that have made the 8 at the bar from afar look like a 4 when you get closer up. I think it's right on the money. But I just can't get a read on LeBron as if he's happy in his hometown, because I want the story to work, right? Just out of, you know, hey, this was a really cool story. A guy leaves the city burns his jersey, he wins a couple of championships, then decides to go back. Go back? Who goes back? I mean, does anybody ever go back?
I still find that completely weird.
I do too.
Like, I don't know how I would have felt when Jordan retires, and say he comes back and he just basically tells the Bulls, like, I'm not playing for you, and like kind of forces the hand of Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf and gets out and goes somewhere else and goes for, say, 2 years, wins a couple championships, and then wants to come back to the Bulls in, say, 97 and play another 3 years.
Yeah, it would have been weird.
I don't think I could have done that as a fan. I'd be like, no, you left.
Yeah. I made a career when I was in Colorado Springs. I was in Colorado Springs for good 3 years, 4 years. And then the station went through a management change and a kind of an upheaval, and I was left open. And I took a job in South Carolina, and I was only in South Carolina for a little bit. And then when that was done, my wife and I decided to go back to Colorado. And I'll never forget my wife. She was so wise on this. She said, you realize it is not going to be the same. It is not, you're not going to pick up where you left off. And that's just us, just, you know, going back to the city that we really like to be in. We went back to, and then we didn't go back to Colorado Springs. We ended up in Denver. But with LeBron, it wasn't going to be the exact same thing. You can't recreate. Now, I'm not saying he wanted to do that, because he left Cleveland. When he left Cleveland, it was a problem team, and he had problems with them. But I think he saw in Miami, all right, these are things that I wish I had a team that I could control, like Pat Riley controls this. And I think he saw Cleveland as the best place to go, because if he goes back there and whatever he wants, he'll get. They are going to be so thankful that he's back home. It's going to feel like a natural fit. Now, I just don't get the drama. I don't get why create it. I don't get why do these things that you know are going to be silly scrutinized, you know, just to kind of make up a phrase here. Because let's think about it. A guy unliking his team on Facebook and not following them on Instagram shouldn't be news at all. However, when it's LeBron James and the Cavaliers, it's news. Why is it news? It's not news because he unfollowed them on Instagram. That's not the news. The news is, why did he unfollow them on Instagram? And is it a larger picture than just a simple uncheck of a box? Is he really unhappy with the way things are going the second time around? Now, people say he'll never leave, and I've been on that track for a long time, but I changed my tune on this. I think LeBron can withstand the punishment that fan base would give him if he left again. I think he could withstand it. I think it would be tough, but I think he could withstand it. But I just wonder if he's happy. And again, look, I would love for him to get a title. I would love for him to give that city a title. My God, 30 for 30 is doing a Cleveland is an awful sports town documentary, for crying out loud. Think of all the horrible things that have happened to their sports teams. They lost the Browns, for crying out loud. The Browns! The Browns have been in the league longer than Moses, for crying out loud. And they went to Baltimore. Oh, and the NFL went, oh, no, that's okay. You can have this expansion team that's garbage. And then the Ravens won a Super Bowl, for crying out loud, with the team Ozzie Newsome was creating. They had Michael Jordan hit a shot that took the Cavaliers out of the playoffs. They lost the 1997 World Series to the stupid expansion Florida Marlins, for crying out loud. Again, the Indians have been around forever. Forget the Browns, or the fumble and the drive, Ernest Biner, John Elway. I mean, that team has been snake bit forever. Bernie Kosar, I mean, my God. And LeBron James is the shining light for a city that's dying for a championship. I want to see them get it. But boy, oh boy, has it been a year of, does LeBron even want to do this here? Or does he wish he never left South Beach? I am Tony D. It is the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.